welcome back. This is Common Sense Care, parenting your gender-confused kids with truth and love. So-called affirmative care is the gender industry's one-size-fits-all answer for every child and youth who struggles with gender identity. In no other area of medicine, education, or psychology is one treatment plan assigned to every person. We believe that each child is an individual and should be given the care and treatment that's most appropriate for him or her. So welcome back. I'm Maria Keffler.
And I'm Erin Brewer. And what's our topic for today?
Today we're talking about when parents disagree. Another tough topic. We just have tough topic after tough topic here.
This one can be really difficult if you're in a marriage and you're disagreeing with your spouse about how to handle your trans-identified kid, or if you're divorced and your spouse is maybe affirming and encouraging that identity. In either case, it can be really difficult.
Yeah, and there's definitely too many different threads of this, too many different individual situations. Mm-hmm. As you mentioned, if there's divorce, if there's step parents, if there's animosity, there's really more than we're going to be able to cover in an episode. And I'm not a marriage and family therapist, and I know, Erin, you're not either. So our purpose here today is to just sort of explore what some of those issues may be, talk about some of the ways you might be able to resolve some of them, and just sort of investigate what are some ways that you can support your child if not all of the adults in the picture are all on the same page.
And I think if you are in a marriage and your spouse just disagrees with you about how to handle the situation, it's really important to preserve that relationship. That relationship is important for you and your spouse, but it's also really important for your child. So if your child is already struggling, if there's marital strife, that can really compound the issues. And this is one area where I would suggest that it might be worth re-examining boundaries and to maybe soften a little bit and try to come to some common ground. A lot of times when spouses have a disagreement about something, they can get kind of entrenched in their position. And if you're willing to give a little bit, often that is an opportunity for the spouse to also give and compromise a little bit.
Yeah. And I think it's important to keep in mind your spouse loves your child. Mm-hmm. Now, there are situations where there may be abuse, there may be an unhealthy ex or an unhealthy spouse, but most of the time, both parents love that child and want what's best for that child. And they may just differ on what that best might be or what the best path is to get to a good outcome. But if you can try to approach your spouse with an attitude of, we're not enemies. Mm-hmm. We're both on the same side. We both really want the best outcomes for our child. Give your spouse the benefit of the doubt that he or she has good intentions. I think you're right, Erin. It's so easy to get into this sort of enemy mindset. And a friend of mine, years ago, we were in a marriage topic class together, and he comes from a military background, and he talked about advice that his father gave him when he and his wife got married. The father said, very often when a husband and wife are at odds with each other, there's this thing that's the problem, and they get that thing between them, and they're on opposite sides of it shooting at the thing, but they end up shooting at each other. Mm-hmm. And he said, you need to both get on the same side, shooting at the thing from the same side, mm-hmm. so that you're fighting the problem and not fighting each other. And I thought that was such a great visual and a good way to think about it. And it's a good starting point to just say, I don't want to be your enemy here. I'm not angry with you. I want us to work together. I really want to be a team on this. How can we work together and support each other?
And that can be really hard if you have a spouse who just fundamentally disagrees with you about this issue. If they honestly believe that it's appropriate to affirm a child, if they honestly believe that their child is at risk of, you know, self-harm or suicide, if they're not affirmed, then boy, that can get really intense because, you know, these are two very different ideologies. And yet I know that there are people who can, can make it. You know, use some of the techniques that we've talked about for deprogramming the child, also for deprogramming your spouse. But I think with your spouse, you can also, you know, depending on who they are, you know, some spouses are more emotionally driven, some spouses are more, you know, logically driven. If you can find, you know, a way to reach them, to present your side of it, so that they understand where you're coming from and kind of find a neutral ground. So that might be, okay, we totally disagree with this. I'm willing to use the child's, you know, new name that they want if we agree we're not going to allow medicalization. So these kind of compromises, so that, you know, you're not at odds with each other. Because if you start fighting with each other and that's the focus of your marriage, your child is not going to get the support that they need. And they're more likely to get pulled in more deeply into this trans cult.
It's important to remember, if there are other children in the picture as well, that you still need to parent those other children. And again, if everything in your family is revolving around this trans issue, you're not going to be able to effectively parent your other children and help them. Children who have siblings who are trans identified have some very specific needs, some things that are specific to them that they need special help with. And I think we're going to do an episode on that soon.
Yeah. And the other
thing, keep in mind.
Oh, go ahead.
I was going to say, keep in mind, the whole family is together.
And the other thing that I think is so important, and it's easy to do this, but it's so important to try not to, is not to vilify your spouse and not to say things to the child like you're just like your, you know, father, or you're just like your mother, sort of creating that weird divide. And it's so easy to slip into that. You know, there have been times where I have, you know, maybe said something to my children about their father that wasn't appropriate. And I try to go back and apologize for that. Because in the heat of the moment, sometimes it's hard not to, but the more you can kind of disassociate your spouse from this actual problem, the better, I think, so that you're not vilifying them, so that your kids aren't getting the impression that, you know, you disagree about everything, or that there's something inherently wrong with your spouse. I think that's, and that's, hopefully the spouse can do that with you. Then that's not always easy. I have heard of instances where spouses have actually kind of aligned with the trans-identified child to sort of go after the other spouse. And that's a really difficult situation. What would you recommend for parents in that case?
Wow. Well, before I address that, I wanted to reiterate something you said and echo it, that apologizing. Mm-hmm. If you need to apologize to your child, if you need to apologize to your spouse, that's really powerful. It's really effective and it's really appropriate. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of times as parents, we're afraid if we apologize to our child, we're going to lower our authoritative status. Well, we're not. We're modeling appropriate behavior. When you wrong someone, when you do something you shouldn't have, apology is appropriate. And our kids are not going to learn to apologize for their errors if we don't model that. And with your spouse, if you know you did something that you shouldn't have, if you know you undercut your spouse or you insulted him or her, apology is appropriate for that. It is really important from a parenting perspective that children see parents as a unit. Mm-hmm. As much as possible, we should be coming to our kids with one mind, one attitude. We are presenting a united front. And when we don't, it's so easy for that to happen, what you just talked about. Children will try to divide and conquer. I mean, I think every parent has had the experience with their child where the child comes and says, can I go over to Jimmy's and spend the night? What did your dad say? Dad said I could. And then you talk to your husband like, no, I didn't say that. I didn't say that at all. Or one parent says no, so the child goes to the other parent. That's so common. Mm-hmm. And of course, that's going to happen with the transgender issue as well. If one parent is not in favor of it, the child is going to try to get the other parent, the other adults in his or her life to try to support in that. And if that's happening, it's really important to sit down and have a talk with your spouse and say, you know, like you said earlier, Erin, look, I realize we don't agree on this, but this is really unhealthy for our family. It's unhealthy for our marriage. It's unhealthy for this child. It's unhealthy for our whole family. If you and I are on opposite sides of this, we've got to find a way that we can work together. Mm-hmm. And I think one good way to start doing that is to sit down when you're alone, try to do it in a calm moment and say, I want to understand where you're coming from. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure that I really understand your position on this. It's so tempting to want to say, here's what I think. Here's why you need to agree with me. Mm-hmm. Put your own opinion, your own needs on the back burner for the moment and ask your spouse, please tell me what you think about this. Please tell me your perspective on this. I'll tell a story from my marriage. My husband is very, very logical. I kind of joke that like Mr. Spock from Star Trek seems like an empath compared to my husband. And my husband would consider that a compliment. So he thinks very quickly and he thinks very logically. And very often he will make a statement about something like, my daughter wanted to watch a certain movie. We were talking about it on the dinner table a few weeks ago. And my husband said, no, we're not going to watch that. We're going to watch this tonight. And I was like, you big bully. Why do you get to decide? There's five of us here, you know? So I talked to him about it later. And I actually don't remember now what the thought process was, but there was a very good reason why we should not watch that movie and why this other one was actually a good one to watch that night. He had walked through all this logic in his head. And I think it had to do with like, well, that movie is no longer on Netflix, so it's not available. So we'd have to go get it somewhere else. But he had a very logical thought process and he got to the end of it and just presented it. And as much as people joke that women expect men to read their minds, my husband often thinks, well, my logic process is very clear. Why is everyone not tracking with it? Mm-hmm. And I have to tell him, like, the rest of us don't think like you do. Yeah. So if you can just say, hey, and I said this to my husband, I'm like, can you walk me through why you said that? Because my initial reaction was, you're just a big selfish bully who wants to watch what you want to watch.
Right. Well, and the other thing, you know, when you mentioned that, I'm thinking another thing that's really important is, you know, there's a lot of stress in a family when this is happening. And it's really important to connect with your spouse, not relating to this issue at all. And so find opportunities to go out on dates, find opportunities to, you know, go for walks and talk about, you know, maybe even say, okay, we're gonna only set aside this amount, this specific time to talk about our kid who's having these issues. The rest of the time, we're going to just proceed like a normal couple, because ultimately that child is going to grow up and move away. And you want your marriage still to be there and to be healthy. And this is an issue that could easily divide marriages, but marriages can withstand pretty significant disagreements, as long as the focus is on loving each other and realizing, like you said, that each spouse ultimately wants what's best for the child. And just because you disagree with them doesn't mean that they're a bad person. It just means that you have, you know, this trans ideology, many of us who are now realizing how damaging it is, 5 years ago, we would have been totally into it. I know that for a while I was I would consider myself to be, you know, one of the trans activists, because I didn't understand the implications. And I think that that's where, you know, education is so important, because I suspect that most parents who are, you know, affirming their child, they're doing it because of the lies that have been promulgated by the trans activists. And so it's just a matter of, and you don't want to go in there and be, you know, a know-it-all. You want to very gently present information. One of the things that I learned with my husband is that if I'm able to find another route to provide him with information other than me, sometimes that can be really helpful. And part of that is just because we've lived together so long that when I say something, he, you know, he's like, yeah, yeah, yeah. But if he can hear it from somebody else, sometimes it's a little bit less emotionally laden and he can actually open up to it. And so if you can find somebody else who agrees with you and aligns with you in your thought processes, and ask them to talk to your spouse. Sometimes that can be effective, or to send them information from credible sources that they'll respect. That can be really helpful too.
That's a great suggestion. It made me think about my husband and I went through a period in our marriage that was very, very stressed. It was 10 years ago. We've been married 21 years now. And I think we've been married 10 years or so when this was going on. And at the time, my husband had a friend. He was actually an associate pastor at our church. And my husband really, really respected him. And there were times I would say A, B, C, and D. And my husband would say, no, that's wrong, because, you know, E, F, G, and H. Well, if I'd say, you know what, would you go talk to Bo? Just go talk to Bo about this issue and see what he says. Mm-hmm. And then my husband would come back and say, oh, Bo said A, B, C, and D.
Sometimes it can be really frustrating, but it is sort of the nature of marriage. I think that's, you know, I probably do that with my husband. You know, there are times where he'll say something and I'm like, I need some documentation. You know, I do it too. And I think part of that is just that, you know, you live with your spouse and you know their weaknesses and strengths, but I think in this regard, where there's just so much misinformation out there, the biggest thing is, you know, one of the things that my kind of a motto in my home is, let's cut each other some slack. Mm-hmm. And I say this a lot. I say, you know, we just need to cut each other some slack. And what I mean by that is we need to realize that our intentions are good, that we're a team, and that we can work through this even when we disagree about things. And I think if you can approach it like that, it will be really helpful. There's also, some marriage experts out there who can really offer some good advice. You know, one of them is, when your spouse is saying something that you disagree with, don't go, you know, absolutely. Even if you can think they're talking gibberish, if you do that, that's going to create a divide. Or if you just say, well, that's stupid. And you have to do, we did an episode about validating someone. And this is where it really comes in handy too, is with your spouse. If you can say, so I hear what you're saying is this, and I understand that you're feeling this way. You know, imagine if you were in the other position where you thought that what your spouse was doing would cause your child to commit suicide. I mean, that's what they believe. And so imagine yourself on the other side and try to be empathetic there. This is a spouse who's desperately worried about a child based on misinformation that they've gotten.
Well, and I like that too, that validation and asking your spouse to explain his or her position. Because what you can do is ask questions during that time. You may be 100% sure that you're right and that they're wrong, but giving them a platform to explain themselves. And sometimes I've had this happen for me when someone has asked me to explain myself, and when I'm talking about what I believe, I suddenly realize, you know what, this sounds kind of crazy actually, now that I'm saying this. Mm-hmm. Or you can ask your spouse, okay, the suicide statistic, I hear that a lot. Where does that come from? Do you have, as you said, Erin, I want some documentation on that. Mm-hmm. Ask those questions that are going to help lead your spouse to question some of his or her own beliefs. Mm-hmm. And if those beliefs are accurate, and you realize, oh, I'm not completely right in what I think, then be humble enough to change your mind and go, you know what, I think you might be right. Now, I'm not saying that with the trans issue, as far as there's a lot of lies that are coming from the opposite side. But I'm thinking more in general, if you're arguing with someone and you realize that they've got a point, concede that point and say, you know what, you're right about that. I think I'm going to change my mind about that.
And the other thing, as you were talking, I was thinking about, if you're in a marriage, I mean, there are all sorts of other issues that come up in a marriage. And one of the things that you can do, because this is so important, is that maybe you can stop pushing back about some of the other things that you disagree with your spouse about. Because if they feel like they're just hitting a wall every time they talk to you, like you disagree with everything I say, then it's not going to be as powerful as if you sort of are willing to just let some things slide and make this be the thing that you're firm about, because then there isn't as much conflict in the marriage. And if that, you know, if you're disagreeing about everything, your spouse might just think, oh gosh, they don't agree with me about anything. But if you're willing to say, you know, I think you're right about that and that and that and that, but I'm really concerned about this one thing. It's sort of focusing your energy. And I think it gives you a little bit more credibility with your spouse. They're not feeling like you're just disagreeing with them, you know, because you're disagreeable, but you actually, you know, this is one thing that really maybe they need to examine.
Another really powerful thing that I found in my own marriage is saying thank you.
Yeah.
Just saying thank you to your spouse for anything and everything you can. If, you know, your husband unloads the dishwasher for you, you know, say thank you. You know, if your wife picks up that thing at the store that you needed, you know, say thank you. That's really powerful. It's hard to be angry at someone who appreciates you.
Yeah.
And there's also, it's called the Benjamin Franklin effect, that someone feels more warmth toward a person for whom they have done a favor.
Right.
And so if your spouse did something for you and you appreciate them for it, that Benjamin Franklin effect is going to kick in, where they want to get a little bit more. They maybe want to do more things for you to get a little bit more appreciation. And it really does help build and strengthen your marriage. We're talking a lot about marriages that are intact and spouses that are living together. I don't have personal experience with an ex-husband or you know, an ex-wife, but I think some of these same tactics and strategies you can use even with an ex. You can set aside time to talk about your child. You can appreciate other things about that person and the things that they're doing, and just find ways to agree, find ways to appreciate each other.
And my parents were divorced, and I can say that one of the hardest things for me was the fact that when my mom was mad at me, she would say, "You're just like your dad." Mm-hmm. When my dad was mad at me, he would say, "You're just like your mom." And there was constant fighting, and there was, I was constantly having to choose sides. Mm-hmm. And that is incredibly difficult for a kid. It feels like if I'm friends with mom, then I'm betraying dad. If I'm friends with dad, I'm betraying mom. And it puts a kid in a situation where really there's no way they're going to win. And so I think as angry as you could be with a spouse who is affirming a child who you're divorced from, an ex-spouse, as angry as you might feel, it's so important not to project that, that intensity onto the child, and to make them have to choose, and to make them feel like, you know, there's something bad about that spouse. Because remember, that child is half that spouse. And if they feel like that spouse is a bad person, then that means, you know, something about them might be bad. You know, kids jump to all kinds of thoughts. A lot of times they will assume that the divorce is their fault. And so it's really important, again, to try and foster a better relationship if possible. And to, you know, even if your spouse does something that you completely just absolutely cannot stand, try to make it about that one thing rather than about the spouse being a bad person.
That's a really good point. That's a really good point. And I think there's something we do need to address, and I'm a little scared to address it because it's so difficult, but I know that it's happening to so many people, where your ex-spouse at their house, mm-hmm. this trans-identified child is affirmed, and at your house, the trans-identified child is not affirmed in the transgender identity. And that really becomes a place where the child can divide and conquer. And I know far too many situations where the child just decided to go live with the spouse that's going to put them on the path to transition, or with the parent who's going to put them on the path to transition, and they cut off the parent who's not.
And that is such, I mean, there's some situations, like you said, there's situations where a spouse or an ex-spouse is horribly abusive. And in this case, you know, what I would recommend in this case, because I know this is increasingly happening, is for the spouse that has, you know, the ex-spouse where the, you know, the child has basically left them to go live with the affirming parent, to keep the door open and to let that child know you love them and that you're there for them. And I would even say, you know, if a child is saying, you know, you have to use this name for me, go ahead and use that name. I've talked to detransitioners, and one of the things that they said over and over again is that it takes love for them to come through this. And if all they feel is animosity and judgment from a parent, then it's going to be harder for them to come to that parent if they realize they've made a mistake. And it's going to be harder for them to accept that they've made that mistake in the first place, because they'll get kind of entrenched. And it, you know, there are parents, I've talked to parents who are like, I will not budge an inch on this. And I think that that might be a mistake. And again, this is, you know, each parent has to make a decision. But if your only option to see your child and to have some loving influence on them is to use their pronouns or to use their name, I would suggest considering it. And I'm not saying that's, you know, that you should do that for in every case, and each person has to make that choice. I know I've talked to parents who are like, I will never do that. I will never lie. And again, that's a personal choice, but I do think if you can be a little bit flexible in that, just so that your child knows you're there for them and doesn't completely cut off contact, that might be the way to go.
Yeah, you're going to end up as a parent feeding a lot of love, sowing a lot into this child and this relationship, mm-hmm. and maybe not getting much back. These kids can be very militant in what they want and in their demands, and the demands just keep increasing. I've talked to parents who have said, I did everything the child wanted. Mm-hmm. I did the names, I did the pronouns, I got the binder, I let them have the surgeries, and still sometimes
you lose them.
Cut the parent off. There's no guarantees with this.
And that's where I think that's where one of the things that you actually recommend in your book is that at some point parents have to accept that they might lose contact with their child. And I think once you accept that, then you're more able to make decisions. If you realize that no matter what I do, I might lose that child. So what is it that I'm willing to do? And it may be you're willing to use their, you know, their chosen name, but not their pronouns. It may be that you're not willing to do any of that. And you're willing to say, okay, I'm putting my foot down, and it might mean that I lose contact with my child. Or you might try to do everything that they want them to do. There isn't a right or a wrong answer here at all. I think the goal is to keep yourself as healthy as you can be. And if you're in an intact marriage, to preserve that, because that marriage is going to help. If you're divorced already, it's already so much more complicated. And I just feel for these parents. I've talked to so many parents who have an ex, and a lot of times it seems like that ex-spouse is actually encouraging the transgender identity almost as a way to punish the other parent. It's being used as a weapon. And I'm seeing this a lot, and it's very heartbreaking because these children are being used as pawns. And in some cases, there aren't good solutions.
Yeah, it's a painful process to go through. I am a firm believer that love and truth will always prevail in the end. Mm-hmm. I really believe at some point, these kids are all going to wake up, or yeah. Most are going to wake up and realize.
Yeah, I actually, based on my experience, I was really taught by my mother to hate my father. I mean, there was this message, this constant message that my father was a bad person, that he was an evil capitalist. And she hated my father. She blamed my father for every problem that she had in life. And it got to the point where I had no contact with my father, and I thought he was completely evil. I had cut him off. Because I had integrated all of these messages from my mother. And then once I was away from my mother and gone to college and on my own for a while, and it took a while, but I started to look back and think, wow, there were these things that my father did that showed that he did love me and that he did care about me. And I probably should have not cut him off. And unfortunately, he no longer is open to a relationship. I cut that, you know, because I had originally cut him off. Now he doesn't want to have a relationship with me. I think he was just too hurt. And so I think always being open and know that your child might be, you know, 21 or 25 or 28 or 40, and they might come around and want to have a relationship with you. Be open to that, because that is going to be, you know, an opportunity for you to reconcile and heal.
Yeah. And we need to keep in mind that we are the adults.
Mm-hmm.
We are the ones who have to act selflessly. We have to pour into the relationship. It's so easy as a parent to get hurt. Our kids can hurt us terribly. They can say things that are so cutting and so painful, or yeah, cut us off completely. And it's easy to really get your back up and get angry and say, do you have any idea what I've done for you? You know, you should appreciate me more. But we need to remember that we're the adults and we have to act like it. And our kids are depending on us to be the adults. And yeah, it may cause us a lot of pain. It may take a lot of years. But I really do believe if we continue to love our kids, we continue to speak truth, mm-hmm. that eventually that truth and that love is going to be recognized. Mom really loved me. Mom really cared. Mm-hmm. And sadly, there may be, you know, a situation where you are estranged from your child for a long period of time. But you just got to do what you can do to keep that relationship open.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
I think that's the key is again, in this, like you said, the parents are the adults here. And it's really our job to, you know, there have been times when my kids have been so mad at me. And they, you know, there've been times where there's been a lot of discomfort in the house and a lot of tension for, you know, weeks, maybe months on end, because my kids are mad at me. And if you are a parent who's never had a child who's mad at you, maybe you're not setting firm enough boundaries, because it's typical. I mean, this is very typical adolescent behavior for them to be mad. And another thing that's pretty typical is for kids, like you said, to play the parents against each other. And so this trans ideology is sort of the perfect opportunity for kids to sort of do these things that is very typical among adolescents. And unfortunately, the stakes are really high here, and it can result in children being damaged for life. But also recognize, and I've talked to a lot of detransitioners, also recognize that even if your child goes the worst route possible and gets completely medicalized, they need to know in the end, you're going to be there with open arms. And that's what these detransitioners need. And I've talked to detransitioners who say, my parents don't want anything to do with me because of the decisions that I made. And to me, that's the most heartbreaking thing, is that the kids finally realize they made a mistake and their parents were so upset with them that they're not there for them anymore. And so I just urge parents to, you know, even if your child, you know, went to an ex-spouse, went through all these treatments, and you just are so angry at them for what they did, still have a soft heart for them, still be there for them, because at some point I do believe that they'll need you and they'll want to, you know, they'll want to come home.
Keep a candle in the window.
Yeah. Keep a candle in the window.
They just, kids need their parents. They need their parents' unconditional love. And it's hard to give. It's hard to give when you've been hurt.
Yeah.
And when you have seen from the beginning and said, this path has no good end, and the child took it anyway. Yeah, receive them when they come back. Be yeah. there for them. Because if their own parents can't love them, if that's their perception, my own parents can't love and accept me, where are they ever going to find love and acceptance in their life? They're going to look for it. They're going to try to find it somewhere. And that's part of this ideology, is other adults mm-hmm. in the school, online, social media, these glitter moms and social media groomers. That's what they're doing. They're telling your kid, your parents don't love you. If they don't let you go down this path, they don't love you. And even if they let you go down this path, they don't love you as much as I do.
Right.
And until very recently, adults recognized that as predatory behavior.
Yeah.
Schools prioritized parental authority until recently.
Mm-hmm.
Adults
recognized. You don't go behind parents' backs. The parent-child relationship has been sacred across time, across cultures. I don't think there's any culture in history or present until this this thing with trans ideology until now. I don't think there's ever been a time where the parents were considered superfluous or unnecessary. It's always been recognized. And there are studies that show the best outcomes for kids are kids who have intact families in which to live, intact biological families. That is the best outcome for a child. And this ideology is attacking that, is destroying that. Nobody's gonna stop that but you. You and your spouse are the only ones who are gonna protect your kids from that.
Yeah, and so it is tough. And I would encourage people who are struggling with this to, you know, find resources for how to strengthen the marriage, because if your marriage is intact, you wanna keep it that way. That's gonna be the best outcome for your child. And so find resources, and we can list some in the resources below.
Well, this has been another tough topic. There's probably a lot more that we could have said about different family makeups. But I think the important thing is to just try as much as you can to be on the same page with your spouse and to recognize that you both love your child and you want what's best for the child, and try to focus on what's right rather than who's right. Try to work together to find the right thing for your family and for your child.
Yeah. And to realize that, you know, in the grand scheme of things, as hard as this is now, it's a passing thing. And if you want your marriage to, you know, to continue after this, you do need to focus on nurturing your marriage. Even if you disagree with this, and it's okay to have disagreements with your spouse. That's pretty much normal in marriage. And I do feel like it's important to just really invest in growing the marriage so that you can admit you have this disagreement about one thing, but that you still love each other and you're still going to stay committed to each other so that you have that marriage after the child grows up and moves out and moves on with their life.
And we'll put some resources and information beneath the video, some marriage and parenting resources. And if you need help, find a good marriage and family therapist to get your marriage back on track, because that really is important. People really underestimate how powerful a strong marriage is to your family and to society. So value that and do what you need to do to keep it strong and healthy.
What are we talking about next week, Maria?
Well, you know what? We're going to talk about what we mentioned earlier. Next week is parenting siblings of transgender identified children. I think this gets overlooked a lot because so much in the family revolves around that child who's in crisis, who's transgender identified. But the siblings have some significant struggles that they need to have addressed and have parents to help them with.
Well, good. Well, thank you. And again, I encourage you to come to Partners for Ethical Care if you're looking for resources or if you want to tell us your story. We'd love to hear, you know, what are your struggles and if you have any advice for other parents.
Okay. Thanks so much, Erin. We'll see you next time.
Thanks, Maria. Bye-bye.
We are not doctors or therapists. We are not giving medical or psychiatric advice, and we offer no guarantee of outcomes. We simply want to talk about how to support and love kids using long understood best practices from the fields of psychology, education, and child development. We're glad you joined in our conversation today, and we hope that you took away something you can put in your toolkit for parenting your gender-confused